Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production. Available on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.
I have certain people that I'm like, yo, I want this person to be in my life forever.
Okay.
But I don't want to sign no paperwork with them.
Oh, I did.
You know what I'm saying? Like, that's like, why we got to bring the government into this? I don't fuck with them already.
You know what I'm saying? Now that, I mean, I think this makes a lot of sense, but women are going to...
Yeah, they're going to be... But at least I'm honest.
This is true.
And the thing is, like, I understand because I'm going to put it out there. I believe relationships... And I wish we had some women in here because it's just a bunch of testosterone going back.
Nah, man, it's all right. It's all right.
But I believe
we're speaking from our perspective.
Yeah, from our
perspective. They just gonna have to soak it up.
Yeah,
right
yeah,
now.
Yeah. From my
they got plenty of shows where it's just women and all they do is talk shit about us.
I'm a diverse individual.
All of this shit is real.
Everybody like, what is it? Is he a family man? Is he a trapper? Is he a ladies man? Well, I'm all of it.
All of it.
I beat your ass, kiss your girl, and go tuck my kids in. And then I show up and lead a march on the weekend.
It's all real, real, real.
This is Expeditiously. I am Tip T.I. Harry. The following experience is not a test. The conversations and stories expressed on this podcast are meant to be an expression of purpose and truth. This show, entitled properly Expeditiously, is a free exchange of ideas and opinions with no judgment, no preconceived beliefs, and no fear. You're encouraged to share your thoughts and ask questions as long as it's done with respect. We believe it is through true love and respect for others that we will have an opportunity to change the world and speak truth to power. And we're going to do that one show at a time. Now this is Expeditiously. I'm your host, T.I.P. Yes, indeed. Welcome to another episode of Expeditiously. I am Tip T.I. Harris. Now listen, this is a special episode because in the business today, we often hear the phrase multi-hyphenate. You know what I'm saying? But today's guest kind of takes that term to an entirely different level. He's an actor, a DJ, a director, a producer, a rapper, a game show host, a radio personality, a television host, executive producer, producer, director.
I'm just a hustler.
You dig what I'm saying? Man, please welcome to Expeditiously, Mr. Nick Cannon.
My God, man.
Yes,
man, this is a pleasure. I feel like we were just sitting down and I was on the other side interviewing you. So,
hey, man, guess what? I didn't even have this shit going on at the time.
Yeah, that's crazy. That was the other day ago.
Yeah, that was really like, I think, maybe 3 weeks ago. Legit.
Yeah. Congratulations, man. We were talking about it on the radio show. You breaking records and stuff already. So
man, thank
that's
you.
That's major, man.
I appreciate it. I stumbled into it, man. And I mean, the people.
But you're a natural, man. You just got the gift of gabs. I mean, obviously. As a storyteller and as an MC, but then just this, I mean, we've had private conversations to even how you move. Like, every time you crack a mic open, you know, it's news.
I mean, you know, I think anytime, so we've been able to talk ourselves out of a ticket. You know what I'm saying? That's going to kind of, that's going to give us all the experience we need, man.
Yes, sir.
Hey, man, so let's start with, why don't you, like, let's tell the people where you from.
Man, I was born in San Diego, California, but I tell people, I kind of had that real, like, boys in the hood type of story growing up in, you know, Southern California, wanting to be a part of the gang life.
Right.
Grandpa's, Pops was all in that life. My Pops changed his life and became a minister and went to North Carolina,
right,
where my family's originally from. So once my parents was teenagers when they had me. So I stayed with my mom and my grandmother in San Diego. You know, Pops wasn't around, started getting fascinated by the life. And then when I started getting into too much trouble, my mom shipped me to North Carolina. So
right.
I grew up back and forth between San Diego and North Carolina.
Yeah, I mean, you know what I'm saying? Like, going back and forth at that young age must have gave you, like, two upbringings.
Yeah, real talk.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I try to tell people that all the time because, like, it's interesting because, like, my mom was married to, you know, one of the illest D-boys in the neighborhood.
Right on.
So I got that experience of, like, I could do anything at my mom's house.
Yeah.
We was rolling around in Cadillacs on Dayton's. I had truck jewelry, gazelles, all that stuff. And then when I was shipped to my dad because things was getting a little too hot,
right,
he was a minister. So I couldn't watch nothing secular, listen to nothing. He burned my Snoop Dogg cassette.
What?
Like, seriously, like,
this evangelical. Means
war. Yeah, yeah. Evangelical. Like, my pops was serious with it. So yeah. To have that experience, and then my grandmother also raised me too. So she was like kind of the middle, because she still lived in the hood in Southern California. So right. I kind of got, like, I say the best of three worlds of understanding. Like, I was my mother's only child, I was my father's oldest, right. And I was like my grandmother's baby. So right. Like, I kind of saw so many different aspects of life growing up.
Man, I mean, so well, you got your first big break, like, with comedy, or was it DJing, or was it acting, or was it one of the other 99
probably
jobs?
Probably church, man. At the end of the day, when you're in church, you grew up doing music, comic, all of that. My pops was, you know, preaching and stuff, and I would open up for him.
How could you do comedy if you... So, you were doing clean comedy?
Yeah, it was church comedy. It was Jesus jokes and shit like that. Like, but it was just... It was,
man, tell me one of your Jesus
man,
jokes.
Man, Jesus jokes, they ain't funny no more. they was cute. I was cute. Like, I wasn't really funny, but it's just like doing stuff with, you know, the Shadrach, Meshach, and the Big Black Negro, all of that type of stuff. Taking little Bible stories and putting a little urban spin on them, but it was gimmicky, but really I had a love for music more than anything. My grandfather was a minister of music and left me mad instruments, so I learned how to be a musician more than anything. Growing up, I was always like the producer in the hood with the DJ.
Okay.
So I had cats that were so-called signed to me, and we was doing mixtapes, selling tapes out the trunk of our car, throwing
parties. At what age was this?
This was probably like 14, 15.
Yeah, but that's vision though.
Yeah, and then what the crazy thing, what popped for me, this is the illest thing, it was I was back in San Diego, kind of going to high school. I think I was about 15 years old, and we got a chance to open up for Outkast when the AT Aliens album.
Oh, that's
came.
Where the turban came.
Exactly. Okay. So it was turban time.
You were anointed to wear this turban
by 3,000
himself. Okay, now that shit makes some sense.
But you know what? Like, that was a moment for me, because the crazy thing, we opened up an Outkast in San Diego. It was a dream come true. Met them real quick, but the dude who hosted the show was Guy Tori.
Gotcha. He funny as hell.
Yeah, and he had Fat Tuesdays up in L.A.
Okay.
Everybody was coming through.
Church.
And Chris Tucker, Eddie Griffin, Dave Chappelle, and all that stuff. And I was up there rapping, and he was like, man, you funny too. You should come up. And ever since that day, he invited me. I would drive up to Hollywood every week. And
right.
I would rap and do comedy as people would come into the comedy store.
Uh-huh.
And I was kind of like warming up the crowd. And from there, that's when people started to see me. Everybody from Shaq, Jamie Foxx, Will Smith, they would see me on stage.
Right.
And then, you know, I was a 15-year-old kid doing that. So that's kind of how I got put on.
You were rapping,
yeah.
But then they recognized your ability to do comedy. So you were kind of like,
yeah,
you were going back and forth.
Yeah. You know what's crazy, too? Always, this is the illest thing. Like, I don't know how our bios got mixed up. I used to hear this all the time, like, in the early 2000s, that people said that me, you, and Chingy had a rap group when we was kids. And everybody, they were asking, I was like, nah. I was like, maybe they still. I was like, I was in a rap group called the Bomb Squad, like, and that was the whole thing, but I don't know how that.
They probably just thought we looked like.
Yeah, that was
just three light-skinned niggas.
Exactly.
Just put them together, man.
Exactly.
And call them a group.
But, nah, I remember even, you know, moving around Atlanta, man, and seeing you do your thing on the come up. Like, that shit, that was impressive, man.
People, man.
You was the talk of the town, like, early 2000s.
Just, I appreciate that.
Real
I
talk.
Mean, like, it was always a pleasure, man, just to not have to sell dope.
Facts.
You know what I mean? Man, like, for you, right, you had so much success,
yeah.
You know, consistently.
Yeah.
Even the shit that you dropped, the motherfuckers didn't really fuck with that much. It still seemed like it opened the door for another opportunity.
Absolutely.
You know, you always have, you know what I'm saying, been diverse and landed on your feet. I remember when you were on a show, I think it was NBC.
Yeah, yeah.
You were on the show at NBC, and then you decided to do a stand-up special.
Yeah, yeah.
And you felt like that stand-up special, you were kind of, you know what I'm saying, did you feel like you had been given an ultimatum as to not do it, or you just felt like the material was going to lead to
Yeah, really, it was during the time when we was out there, you know, moving as activists, you know
right.
what I mean? And, you know, we were showing up in St. Louis, New York, marching,
yeah.
And I felt like this was a time, this was my third stand-up special that I was like, yo, I got to be a little bit more poignant. I got to be to the point. And I called it Stand Up, Don't Shoot. Right. I did the shit in the, you know, the black leather, the turban, the gloves, all that. And, like, one of the first jokes I popped off, you know, I was like, I'm, you know, shoot, America's Got Talent, but America's Got Niggas, too. You know what I mean? Like, it was like, and I got to it right off top. And I was like, you know, NBC probably ain't going to like this, but I don't care because NBC stand for Nigga Be Careful. And so, which is true. I mean, so, and I got you know, the, started the air. Went
did
on
you get that joke from Bill Cosby?
Man, you know what? I actually knew.
Bill Cosby got, man, Bill Cosby got, you know, a little right of credit on that one.
Absolutely. But they didn't like that. You know what I mean?
And they
asked me, you know, to pull the joke and
what?
Even all the way to pull the special. I was like, yo, y'all bugging. I may be employed by you guys on something else, but this is a whole different art form. This is a whole different platform. And, you know, I stood my ground and they threatened to fire me. I was like, you can't fire me because I quit.
Yeah, I think the worst thing any corporation can ever ask a comedian to do, and this is, you know what I'm saying, this is a tradition here. I don't know if you drink, but, you know, we have a little 19.
I appreciate it. I don't drink, but I say I'm going to watch you partake.
Okay, why not, man? I know
go ahead and get this alkaline water in there.
Yeah. This is how Brother Nick Cannon stays rich and on time for all of his endeavors. As my manager looks at me like, see, that's what the fuck you're supposed to be doing.
We'd be a lot richer if we did.
We'd be a lot richer. We'd be rich as Nick if we could just cut the shit, Tip.
Hey, man, hey, you pretty damn rich, Tip. So, keep doing what you're
doing.
Man,
you know what, man? To me, it's about being rich in opportunity, you know?
Yeah.
As long as the things that I do continue to speak for the voiceless and provide me with new opportunities, I'm good.
Man, I look up to all the things you do. I can even say that there's times where I've been envious of your moves just because, I mean, you've had such the journey that I feel like is going to go down in history as one of the greatest to ever do it. Like,
man, thank you.
And just really, like, from all the adversities that you face.
That's what I was about to say, man. Were you envious of me when I had to go to prison?
But I
was envious.
But I remember.
Because you really would have asked, like, I would have let you take my place.
But you did that shit in the coldest way. Like, I remember before you went in, it was just like you was for the community and we were speaking that stuff. I ran into you in D.C. and you just had such the right perspective, a head on your shoulders. And, like, the community was behind you in such a way, man. And it's just like I commended this journey because, like, at the same time, your business was still together.
Right.
And then when, after it all was said and done, you came out and reinvented yourself. And like, people wanted to write you off because you was on top.
Right.
Like, and then they was like, oh, he done messed it up.
Like a motherfucker.
He done messed it up. And then you played that card and went a whole nother direction and came out and was like a leader and a family man and a father. And it's like, yo, man, look at that journey. Like, that's resilience right there.
Yeah, I mean, I appreciate that.
Yeah.
I always have a conversation with people whenever we're talking about, like, the greatest and who. Like, I feel like legends are made when you're doing great and then something happens and you have to pivot and readjust yourself and you can do great again.
Facts.
You know what I'm saying? It just ain't that much fun or ain't as much fun looking at a motherfucker do shit perfect all the time.
Facts.
You know what I mean? Like, I mean, of course you've never made any mistakes.
Yeah.
Of course. You know what I mean? I think that, but, you know.
And the thing is, on some man shit, like, you would make a mistake and then immediately own up to it. You know what I mean? Like,
especially the times I got caught.
But I mean, like I remember, like, during
my hand's in the cookie jar.
Yeah,
okay,
yeah,
guys.
Sorry,
man.
You know what was brilliant to me?
As I pulled my hand out the cookie jar, I apologize for my hands being in the cookie jar.
Like, I gotta bring this up because this shit was a brilliant play.
What was that?
I remember it was BET weekend. Mm-hmm. It was during the Tip versus
TIP.
And because you have two sides.
Yeah.
And you were like, this was the, you know, T.I. suited and classy.
Right.
And,
right.
You know, very respectful. But mm-hmm. we know, T.I.P. Tip is a different dude. So it's BET weekend.
Okay.
And we all, I see T.I.
Okay.
I'm running the T.I. T.I. is, you know, shaking people's hands, yeah, using big words, like Deborah Lee's loving them, all this stuff, as president of BET.
Right on.
And then I don't know what happened because I was on the other side of the room. Mm. All of a sudden, there was some commotion and Tip showed up.
And it was a slight unfortunate misunderstanding.
But Tip is a real nigga, and
I mean,
things went down. But the thing that was brilliant, because I remember I was with Deborah Lee when we escorted, because they didn't nobody know what was going on. Right. They escorted us out. And then not even 24 hours later, you got on the stage at the BET Awards and apologized for Tip's behavior.
Yeah.
T.I. apologized for Tip's behavior.
You know what I'm saying? After I won.
After he won an award. I was like, yo, that is brilliant. Like, because all the niggas respected Tip.
Yeah.
But all of the industry and the community respected T.I. for stepping up and truly being like, look, I did some things wrong.
Yeah.
I'm learning. I'm growing.
I think that I've always been, like, you know, transparent, yeah, and honest.
But that's
about,
like, who can be that? Like, you were two people at one moment and both were respected. Like, that shit is brilliant.
Man, I appreciate that. You know, I forget about shit like that. You
that
know?
Shit, that, like, that's the type of shit I was like, man, they're gonna talk about that for years. Like, and I always say that. I remember during that time, even before that, and all of the adversity that you was going through, I was like, he on some Tupac shit, like man, to where there's that dichotomy of somebody who, you know, the passion of a gangster. Think about, if you ever really know gangsters, they love hard and they
extremists.
Yeah, yeah. You know, if they love you, they love you. If they hate you, they hate you.
Yeah,
you know what
true
I mean?
Extremists. Yeah. I mean, I think that's definitely the person who I could say, you know, as I develop my application of skill as an artist,
yeah,
you know, Pac was definitely the person who I felt like I most related to. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I think because, you know, although we came from, you know, the trenches, we still had kind of like an awareness.
Right.
Of community and society, and, like, you know, shit ain't right. You know what I mean? Like,
facts.
I know I'm doing wrong.
Right, but
this shit is wrong.
Yeah, it's all wrong.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think we both had that. So if there are any similarities there, man, it's definitely by design.
Yeah, nah. And it's you continuing the legacy, man. You've taken it where he took it and beyond. I mean, from classic music to movies to, you know, to now you've done things with your family and your business that, you know, wasn't even possible in the earlier days of hip hop.
Like, yeah, that's true.
Right? I mean, us even sitting here, you know, having intellectual discussions on podcasts.
Yeah.
Like, this type of stuff wasn't available to the cast that came before us, man. So, I mean, hats off to you for
man,
sure.
Man, love. And likewise, because I don't think you get all of the accolades and the respect you deserve just for being a real nigga on the front lines of the movement. You
I
know
appreciate
what I'm saying?
It. Yeah, yeah.
Because you fucked up a lot of money with the NBC shit.
A whole lot of money.
You fucked up a lot of money.
Millions.
You know, you dig what I'm saying? And people need to acknowledge that, you know?
Yeah.
It ain't like, okay, Nick just out here talking this shit wearing fucking turbans because he feels like it, you know, holding up his fist every now and then.
Yeah.
This motherfucker put millions of dollars on the line.
Fact.
For, you know, for the movement, for what he believe in, to speak up for the voiceless, and I think that, you know, that should be considered and acknowledged.
Yeah, nah, and then we on the front lines, like you said, like, you know, if it's something like, I was out there in Ferguson, we was out there in New York, every time something goes down, like, I try to get to it, you know, and just in being in every community, being certified in Atlanta, on the West Coast, New York, like, you the same type of individual. It's not, you know, ain't a hood that we can't go to when you solid, when
that's
you
real,
when you check in and you pull up and you let them know that you there for the community.
That's real.
They happy to see us. You
I
know
think
I mean?
I think the reason you've always had that ability, I mean, I guess as well as me, is because you always stay true to who you are. You ain't really
trying to be nothing else.
Ain't trying to step outside of yourself, you know what I'm saying? Get cute for a second here. You dig? You ain't really being influenced by the environment.
I don't care what motherfuckers think about me.
Yeah,
I just, you know, stay true to it.
That's real. I think, you know, I think that's a true representation.
It's so interesting, too, that you bring that up, because it's like, over the years, where, you know, it's the corny talk or this and that, like, which is fine. Like, that never, you know what I mean?
But you know how you present yourself is how you would be received.
It was like,
you
know, hey, I play the square game, especially,
yeah,
like, because when you come from it, like, I ain't got shit to prove to nobody. So, but the thing is, what's so ironic about it is people praise the cats who really not that, who live in this facade, who
this
pretending to be that.
This
and then the
true.
Cat, like, I was like, yo, I come from everything that y'all talk about,
right.
but I don't glorify it.
That's
you know
right.
what I mean? There's no reason to glorify it.
That's
I,
right.
I could tell all of the stories, that, but I was like, why? Like, because the whole time when I was trying to get out of it.
Yeah.
So when I got out of it after, whether it's the homies getting killed or realizing that gangbang life wasn't for me.
Right.
Like, I realized that very early on. I realized that selling dope, I attempted it. It just wasn't for me because yeah. I had the heart of an artist. I had the heart of someone who wanted to help my community. And I did that. And from that point, I was like, yo, I'm going to stay down with this. Now, for the cat to...
The shit worked out, Nick.
The shit worked. That's
what
I'm saying.
Kind of worked out.
Like,
bro.
I'm saying, like, so now I can step back and be like, look, I can't be nobody but me. Like, and as that narrative begins to change, because the narrative in our community is starting to change.
Right.
Like, the idea of just being the illest gangster and the toughest cat, like, now...
We realize that shit don't mean that.
Yeah, now we tapping into the academics, the intellectuals, the cats really getting money.
A higher level of consciousness, you
absolutely.
Know what I'm saying?
We on that frequency.
You dig? Now, let me ask you this.
Yes, sir.
What is something along your journey that you've had to unlearn?
Unlearn? Oh, shit. To be honest, my behavior... when it comes to women. Yeah, like, and I had to unlearn, it's a whole new paradigm shift because I come from the culture of wanting to be pimping and wanting to be, you know, just I'm glorifying the aspect of disrespecting women.
Well, okay.
That's what I had to... I'm still unlearning it because... Yeah, I'm going to be honest because, you know, and my music's still using bitch, still using hoe, still, like, you know. But at the same time, we get coming into this world of, like, we embracing our queens. We getting back to that idea of uplifting the woman and understanding that the black woman is God. But... It's a hard thing to unlearn when it's been perpetuated in from our music to our movies to just sexism in general, treating women like second class citizens. That shit is difficult, man. Like, because I love women. Like, I love women the way Pac love women, the way Prince love women, the way Lenny Kravitz love women. I love, like, them. So there's an aspect where I'm obsessed with them.
What I was about to say is if what you're doing is done out of love and it's endearing, I don't know how. Now, if you're obsessive, you didn't say you had an obsession.
Nick. No, I do. I
get what you're saying because
I think I'll never be able to be with just one woman again. Like, that, like, that's going to be tough for me. Like, I did it in a marriage. I was faithful in my marriage, but I couldn't.
So you was faithful in your marriage?
Absolutely. The whole time I was married. But I knew, like, you know, and the reason why we split up, it had nothing to do with infidelity or nothing like that. But I knew I would never get married again. Once I stepped away from that, I was like, that construct is not designed for me.
Yeah.
And so as much I gave it my all. And then, because even before that, I was like, I don't believe in marriage. But shit, it was Mariah Carey. Whatever she say, I'm with it. like, if she wanted to say we was going to the moon, I'm like, let's go.
Well, you married well.
Yeah.
You married
well. If I'm going to marry somebody, I'm going to marry her.
And it don't look like you've looked back since.
Right. Exactly. So, but I just know, like, even in that thing, like, I know I'll never be in a relationship again. And, like, I know I'll never get married again. So, I'm like, I'm trying to figure that shit out.
So, what about, like, the poly lifestyle?
Even, like, I respect a polyamorous situation.
Yeah.
But me, personally, that's too much of a construct with too many rules in it. Like, I don't want to answer
rules?
To nobody.
What
I don't
rules?
Want I don't want five or six that I don't want. No, I want to be by my goddamn self. Like, and, like,
okay, you want to be by yourself?
Yes.
All right.
Forever.
You sure?
Man, I got Lonesome tattooed on my neck. I'm good.
Are you sure?
Nick, but
it's
I don't
easy
have
to
what,
say right now, Nick.
See, I don't have what you have. You got a beautiful situation. You got a queen that
yeah,
y'all go through
situations.
It and rock and children. Like, I got kids. I got kids by, you know, different women. So
do I, Nick.
Right. But it's like, I feel, and I want more kids. But
Oh, believe me, you keep it up, you're going to have it. Believe me. You keep it up at the rate you're going, you have no problem.
I'm trying to figure this shit out.
You'll be caught up, man. You'll be caught up in no time. Like, I mean, what is it that you're trying to figure out exactly?
Because I don't want to be responsible for nobody else's happiness. Like, I'm still trying to figure out my shit. I'm still trying to get my shit together. And,
okay.
And I ain't going to get too deep into this shit, but the fact that, you know, I have a condition that stress... puts me in the hospital, you know, on some lupus type shit. And to me, all relationships equal stress. I ain't never been in a relationship that wasn't stressful, whether I'm putting the stress on myself or whether she putting the stress on me. Yeah. So I'm like, ever since
it's gonna be some of that.
Ever since I've been out of relationships, I haven't been back in the hospital.
You know what?
I'm just saying.
But this is a fucking logical explanation, honestly. I can't. I have no rebuttal. I wouldn't expect you to fucking go to the hospital for love.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
So I'm like, look, I'm just working on me. I'll try to be the best me possible. I love women. I love various women. And, hey, and they understand my. They understand how I move.
I think that's the key to it all. You know what I'm saying? To just understanding.
Yeah, and honesty up front, being solid. Like, look, this is how I move.
So out of all of the women, out of all of the wilding out girls.
Oh, here you go. Here you go.
Oh, or maybe not.
Maybe not.
Or maybe not. You know, but out of all of them that have an honest understanding of where they stand in Nick Cannon's life, out of all of them.
Yeah.
It's never one of you like, you know what? Maybe you should stay another week.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I'm still a hopeless romantic. Just because I don't believe in relationships don't mean I don't believe in love.
Right.
So I care deeply for a lot of them. Like, I have a lot of love to give.
I'm sure they care deeply for you too, Nick.
But and I have situations. I have certain people that I'm like, yo, I want this person to be in my life forever.
Okay.
But I don't want to sign no paperwork with them.
Oh, I did.
You know what I'm saying?
I did.
Like that. Like, why we got to bring the government into this? I don't fuck with them already.
You know what I'm saying? I think this makes a lot of sense, but women are going to...
Yeah, they're going to be... But at least I'm honest.
This is true.
And the thing is, like, I understand because, I'm going to put it out there, I believe relationships... And I wish we had some women in here because it's just a bunch of testosterone going back
and forth. Nah, man, it's all right. Nah, it's all right.
But I believe...
We're speaking from our perspective.
Yeah, from our
perspective. They just going to have to soak it up
right now. Yeah, from my
they got plenty of shows where it's just women and all they do is talk shit about us.
Come on.
What were you saying?
I believe relationships and mainly marriage is designed to please women.
Mm.
Just because... That they get the dress, they get the ring, all of that stuff. All their life, they're talking about getting the husband,
it's
and the house
fantasy.
With it.
It's their fantasy.
Yeah, like it's. I'm never.
We're just there.
Yeah, we just show up. Like even
there.
At my wedding, I was a part of the wedding.
Yeah, mine too. Yeah.
I just told you, tell me where to stand, where to go. Yeah. I'll be there. I'll repeat what this thing say, and
it's right. Now, And paying for the wedding is a whole nother, like, I've never seen something that was so much of a racket. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's almost like once they got you in and you set the date, all the vendors, whether it's the venue, whether it's the chef, the dressmaker, and it gets to a point where it's like, that's how much it is.
Yeah.
You're going to pay for it.
Yeah, and because you want to stunt for the woman you love.
You mean to tell me you're going to do that to her?
Yeah.
If you don't pay me five times the motherfucking retail price,
this was so cold. I'm going to tell you what. I'll start with the ring, right?
Now, next time, though, if you ever do it again.
I'm never doing it again.
I'm just saying. If you ever do it, instead of paying for a wedding, man, just buy a new house and have it in the backyard.
But see, well, now.
Because that's what I wish I did.
Mariah Carey is an entrepreneur and a brilliant businesswoman.
Mm.
Our wedding was on her island in the Bahamas at the house.
Jeez.
And she filmed it. And she took a music video budget to pay for the wedding.
Damn.
So hats off to her. Yeah, that was a very brilliant woman.
You might need to call her, see if she want to get married again.
If I were to do it again, it would be to her.
You know what I'm saying? Now, that makes sense. So if you would get married again, it'd be to Mariah.
It'd be Mariah.
Yeah, I can dig that.
But I'm going to tell you what, like, this even fucked me up because I was in my 20s when it happened. And because I was a hopeless romantic, I was always getting engaged because I wanted to be married. So I got engaged to this one chick, right?
Okay.
Went to Jacob, spent it all.
Huh?
Everything I had.
Why?
Bought for the ring. I bought this chick a
everything
ring.
Everything you had?
Well, not everything I had, okay, but okay. It was like, It was up there. There's a couple hundred thousand dollars on a ring.
That's too much.
Yeah. And, you know, because I'm trying to stunt. I propose in Times Square.
Oh, my God.
I done rented jets and Rolls Royces. Well, the Rolls was mine. But either way, it was still like I was trying to stunt. I had the cameras there.
But why?
Exactly. Well, it turns out she wasn't the one. And as you know, this man, fine haberdashery and jewelry.
Yes, yes, yes.
Jacob, the jeweler at the time, was the hottest jeweler, and he had a certain design. When he designed things.
Right.
So he designed her ring, which was, you know, like I said, a couple hundred thousand. And it had, you know, it was like a diamond in the middle, couple of, you know, invisible cut diamonds on the side.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a nice ring.
Okay.
So it doesn't go well. She gives me the ring back. Right?
Oh.
Yeah, at the end of it.
That's generous.
Yeah. She gives.
Oh, was that a part of the deal?
Nah. She gave it back because she, you know, she didn't want to. And it was a process. It was weird and stuff. But, you know, I send it back, give it to Jacob or whatever like mm-hmm. that. Like, and then time passes, you know, a couple different chicks in between.
Did you save the ring?
No, I gave it.
You gave it back.
Your
money.
Yeah. Well, all of that good stuff. So then it's time to propose to Mariah.
Uh-huh.
I got to spend more money. Even Mariah literally tells me.
No, you don't.
No, this is what she tells me. She's like,
say?
I seen the little ring that you gave that girl.
How she see it?
It was everywhere.
It was People Instagram magazine, and shit?
Not back then, but it was like People Magazine, and it was a moment.
Shit.
So I go back to my guy, Jacob. I was like, I got to go bigger than what I did before, Jake.
Mm.
Like, that one, this one, it got to be up there.
Mm.
Push all my chips in. It's all I got. Because this is really all. I'm 28 at the time.
Double down.
Every wilding out check, every drumline check, a gigolo check. This is all I got, Jake.
Yeah.
Like, and this time, it's. I think this one was at least, I think this was 16 carats total.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
But the ring, because Jacob designed it, mm-hmm. looked very similar to the, you know, to the layman's eye as the ring from the other.
Why'd you do that?
Jacob did it. But this one had pink diamonds on it because it's Mariah.
Okay.
But if any, then nobody, everybody was like, oh, Nick just went and recycled that ring. And that was the story. That was like the first story after the wedding. Like,
damn.
Nick Cannon recycled, didn't have enough money, so he recycles one engagement ring.
Well, that's fucked up.
That's how my marriage started. So like when you talk about weddings and stuff, like I'm trying to do my all, and luckily, you know, it all panned out pretty well, and I started making a whole lot of money at that
point.
Yeah,
you did great.
But to start it off, like I was just trying to be the best. This is Mariah Carey. She could buy all of, she could put wedding rings on every finger if she want to.
Now let me ask you this though, because you mentioned that she said to you, you know, you're gonna have to do much better for me on my ring. So,
and I don't know, she might have been joking, but she said that shit.
Okay, but so you guys were already talking about, you know.
Yeah, all of that.
So it was like first, like, you know, first time y'all wake up together. Nick's like, okay, so I got my toothbrush here.
Yeah. Yo, when I tell you, I went all in tip. Like,
man.
It was one of those things where, I mean, she was my dream girl.
As you should.
Yeah,
bro.
And she
Why
was
wouldn't you?
She was talking the same talk I was talking, like, because I was like, yo, I don't really believe in marriage, but there's something that we got here that I would vibe with this.
You know, I can get used to this, Mariah.
Yeah. Fact, that's
I can get used to this.
And she was like, I'm with it, too. And the crazy thing, we spoke so many things into existence from, like, the first time we kicked it for a weekend, and we was talking about everything, like, yo, how crazy would it be if we had a boy and a girl and da-da-da-da and this. And then even if it didn't work out, we could still be friends. Like, we talked, like, we almost to the T, talked it out.
What?
And it played out that way. And it's so crazy that, like, I truly believe in speaking things into existence.
Absolutely.
And the universe, you know, bringing certain spirits together. So it's one of those things where she always going to be solid with me. She always going to be somebody that I love. And, you know, we got some beautiful kids out of the whole thing.
Man, I mean, I think it was a beautiful time, you know. I remember me and my old lady, we came to you and Mariah's house.
Yeah, man.
You know what I'm saying? A few times.
A couple times.
And y'all always, you know what I'm saying, maintained a certain level of kind of happiness and sanctity
and
about
you. Just be chilling.
Yeah. That shit was
And even still, when
dope.
It didn't work out, we still that way. You know, we talk every day.
Right. Now, people may not remember this, but I do recall you having
a battle of sorts with the likes of one of the greatest wordsmiths slash rappers known to man in Eminem.
Yep. This is Mariah's fault, too.
You know, we're actually doing an episode on Expeditiously about some of the greatest hip-hop beefs of all time.
Facts.
I'm sure you know you won't make it on there, but for those kids
I should,
who
Tim, I should.
Hey, man.
He didn't want to battle me. It could have went down.
Can you blame him? I think what was there? It was 100,000. It was a boxing.
I was like, whatever he want to do, I'm with it.
God.
And this is the only reason why.
That thing.
I wish I could have hollered at you.
That Mariah pussy got.
It was. Think about it.
Biting. You hear me?
Nigga, think about it. You in a situation, right? Uh-huh. I think we was flying back on the jet from Africa somewhere.
Did you hear this shit?
And this motherfucker drop a song, like. Talking shit, like calling her all kind of bitches and hoes. I'm like, this is my wife. This is my new wife.
Ooh.
I got it. Like, and
it was hard.
I wrote a letter first. I believe right when, I don't even know if Twitter had came out yet. Right during that time when social media just started popping. So I wrote this long ass letter, pretty much saying, look, I respect you as an artist.
Right.
I'm actually a fan. I think you are one of the best to ever do it. But from man to man, you talking out of pocket to my wife, you got to be held accountable for that. So I need to see you face to face.
I can dig that.
And that's all I would say. Like, face to face, let's get to it.
I can
now,
dig that.
Now, whatever happens when we face to face, happens.
Well, I can dig
that. You know
that.
What I mean? And it's funny because, you know, they like to build up these superhero characters.
They do.
But if you've ever seen Marshall Mathers in person, he's not someone that looked like he really wants to smoke with most.
I don't know.
I'm just saying, for me.
I think he got that crazy white boy energy, though.
I mean, but...
You know what I'm saying? Like, you never know what can happen.
You never know. I'm just saying, I'm very secure with what... So I was ready I was ready for whatever. So I went looking for him.
Ooh.
I called managers.
Damn.
And at the time, you know, we was working... God rest his spirit and Chris Lighty.
Okay.
You know what I mean? He was my guy. So.
Right.
So, and you know, he had 50 and, you know, him and Paul was cool. So I was like, look, if you want to get on the phone, if I need to come to Detroit, like, what is it? Like, because you done disrespected my wife. And this is my, I gotta show my wife I'm a man. For
that's
one.
Real. Well, yeah, you gotta.
And then two, it got, you know, he said my name. I'm like, look, I know I ain't going to be. I said that. I know I'm not going to be able to out-rap you, but I will whoop your ass.
Ooh.
And those were the exact words.
Ooh.
At the time.
Yeah, man. I mean,
cooler heads prevailed.
I think, yeah, I would have ended up in Detroit somewhere. But
that's
you,
what
but guess what? You still wouldn't have found you.
Fact. So, but again, time passing, we got, and I was like, yo, well, let's just chop it up. And then, you know, Mariah, I feel like Mariah won the battle because she put that shit out. She put the Upset song out, put Gucci Man on there. Gucci was going at him. Like, it
damn.
Was, and like, I was like, that was well played. You know, I think they both got some records out of it.
Damn.
And everybody went their separate ways. My thing, I was like, yo, come on, wildin' out, man. Let's have some fun with it now. Like, at this
point. You talking about with Eminem?
Yeah, that shit.
Shit, man.
Like, he one of the best rappers and battle rappers to ever do it. Hey. We'd have some fun.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't think...
I don't want to fight no more.
I don't think any of you guys want the kind of smoke this man would come
it on. It would be amazing,
out.
Though. It would it be would, fucking it'd amazing. Be,
that
it'd be
shit
the best
be
episode.
Biblical. Do you hear me, man?
He would just body everybody.
Jeez.
But, and again, like I said, I'm still he's still in my top five. He's
yeah,
still,
absolutely, man.
But
he's
I'm just like, anytime. I feel like anytime somebody says something, you're a man of strong character and morals.
Absolutely.
Like, you just got to be held accountable.
I got to see you.
Yeah, if you say something.
Absolutely got to see you.
We're going to have this conversation.
Yeah.
Like men. That's all I wanted.
Yeah.
And, you know, he was talking and running and ducking. He apologized. He did apologize.
Well, I mean, I don't even think he did. And then, like, for because you got to think about M's career.
Right.
His career, like.
Nobody's held him accountable.
Nobody's taking him seriously. Like, as far as, like, say, like, you talk about the Backstreet Boys, he's talking
because they ain't trying to whoop his ass.
But.
Have you noticed he never talked out of pocket to none of us?
But, I mean.
And he. Then
well,
I was
now,
like, oh, like, now you
Benzino,
think I'm gonna talk.
Benzino. You don't remember Benzino?
Yeah. And that's Benzino gangster.
Yeah.
But see, like, I think that was calculated.
I don't know.
Because he kind of went at it. Was more, yeah, all right, I'll give him that.
I mean, I don't know. I mean,
I'll give
him
that. I'll give you that.
I don't think that he went out of his way to go at you necessarily, or ever went out of his way to not go at anyone.
I think, and again, because
you were kind of collateral damage.
Yeah, I was collateral damage.
You know what I mean?
Because he was talking about my, and whatever their personal situation was, the hearsay, and they everybody got three sides to the story.
Point is, he wasn't on the jet.
Right.
You dig what I'm saying?
Right. And then, and like I said, whatever y'all had, I don't know. I'm saying, but you're not going to disrespect my wife.
Absolutely.
And that's what he, you know, that's what he came
to. I don't care what y'all had going on. I'm in here cracking lobsters now.
Exactly.
You understand me?
God damn it.
Coast to coast. Okay, now this is just a reminder for everybody to go to expeditiously.com to get all of your Expeditiously merch. And if you don't know how to spell it, look it up, motherfucker. It's the information age. Expeditiously.com. You ain't even got to make the TI capital in the middle, man. But go and get your merch right now, man, because it is available. And I can tell you, you know, with a clear conscience and a pure heart, you buy it, you wear it, you look better. All right, man, you know what I'm saying? That's enough cap for today, and I'll see y'all later. Expedition. Hey, where you think you going? The show ain't over yet, man. Expeditiously continue. So, I mean, you speak of Wildin' Out, and Wildin' Out is probably one of the most ingenious thoughts that anyone could have brought into fruition, man.
I appreciate that.
To mix, you know, hip-hop and comedy.
Yeah.
I think that, and then to do it with new up-and-coming social media icons.
Yeah.
You know, I think that you guys have definitely become a staple for the generation.
That, man. And I appreciate you always, like, from the beginning, from, like, season one to the last season, man.
Right.
You always supported you and your family. So
absolutely.
I appreciate you guys. Because a lot of people, they scared to come on that show.
I mean, a lot of motherfuckers shouldn't have never came on that motherfucker.
Yeah, we got at some people, but it's really been a fixture to where it's this generation's version of In Living Color and Def Jam when it comes to, like, introducing new talent.
Sure.
I mean, this was a place where people saw Cat Williams for the first time. People saw Kevin Hart for the first time.
Whoa.
You know, Pete Davidson, DC Young Fly, like,
dope.
Giving them that platform to kind of take it to that next level and be introduced to a mainstream audience. So, and then at the same time, you know, a place, really one of the only few places to for hip-hop artists to come perform and show a different side of themselves.
Right.
So I think it's going to go down in history, you know, as one of those things where, oh, we didn't expect it to be this, but look right. What it turned into. I mean, we're going to be...
I think it's going to be one of the longest running shows.
Yeah, we about to be 300 episodes.
Devin said, like, well, how many fucking seasons? You got more seasons than The Simpsons now. How many fucking seasons do
Facts,
you have?
Nah, it's a bunch, man. And then, like, we do the tour. You came out on the tour a couple times.
Right,
I appreciate
right.
that. Like,
and then you got a Wildin' Out restaurant.
Restaurant. Yeah, we got one in South Beach. We opening one
you're
in Hollywood.
Too much money, Nick.
I'm just,
you're
hey,
too
man,
much money,
trying,
Nick.
To diversify, Tim. Trying to diversify. Trying to diversify. We get to it.
But what was one? The name, like, the funniest thing that you can remember that happened on Wildin' Out.
Shit. Oh, man. It gotta be that time. Carlos Miller came, well, I think Chrissy Teigen was on the show. And I
okay.
think she had a little bit to drink.
Uh-oh.
Because that's what people do. We get, you know, to get them more comfortable, we open
damn
the bar
sure
up.
Do exactly what I tried to do to you, and you refused. Exactly the same exact thing.
I know the tricks.
Same exact thing.
So,
actually, I actually like, you know, the taste of this shit for myself.
That, you
know
as you should.
Not this makes me feel like a journalist for some reason. You know what I'm saying?
That's that old school journalism.
You know,
that Walter Cronkite.
Because without this, something. I only care about my questions and my answers, you know. For me to care about this shit, really, I have to, you know, inebriate
something.
Myself.
So Chrissy Teigen's on the show. She enjoying, killing the episode. We get to the Wild Style battle, and she just up there, she feeling good. She
okay.
talking shit. She pushing people on
Whoa.
The shoulder. People only knew her as, like, John Legend's girlfriend at the time. They wasn't even married, you know.
Mm.
So she, like, pushing on Carlos and, like, trying to rap. And something where I don't know the exact bars, but he pretty much said, John, you can't be hitting this right. She keep on touching me like this. I'm going to be fucking your girl tonight. And he picks her up.
Oh, my goodness.
Just letting it off because she got on a bikini because it's the swimsuit episode.
Gotcha.
And takes her to the back. And I was like, oh, shit. Not
Damn.
Only did he just physically pick up Chrissy Teigen and take it to the bed. He pretty much told John Legend, I'm fucking your girl. He said it. I'm fucking your old lady tonight.
Damn.
And that episode still airs.
Damn.
So that probably had to be the wildest moment ever.
That shit crazy.
Yeah, I can't. I was like, that shit happened. Like,
I would have expected John Legend to write a very long letter after that.
Right. He would have done some shit I would have
to write a very long letter.
He was cool.
I challenge you to a duel.
To a piano duel.
You, brother, Carlos. You know, shout out to John Legend, man. You know, he's actually.
Facts. He got bigger beef right now. Him, Chrissy and Trump, they going at it.
Yeah. You know, I'm actually on their side. You know.
As you should be.
And he's also executive producer, man, for Rhythm and Flows, the competition show on John Netflix.
John is another one of them dudes that's going to go down in history. I mean, is he an EGOT already? If not, he about to be. That's when you, EGOT, you got the Emmy, the Grammy, the Oscar, and the Tony.
I think he's missing one of them.
I think he's missing one of them. I don't know if he, does he have, I don't think he got an Emmy. I know he got the Grammy. I know he got the Oscar.
Right.
He's done some stuff on Broadway, so I don't know if he got the Tony yet, but I know it's coming. He's definitely going
to
be.
Let's just drink to the thought of him, Div.
EGOT.
You know, yeah, the EGOT. The EGOT will be got.
Exactly. John Legend.
And a lot of times, man, people don't really know what all you be going through because you keep a smile on your face through it all, man. But you've been having a battle with lupus.
Yeah, man. Since 2012.
Like, you just found out that you were affected by it?
Yeah, again, you know, we was up in Aspen during the holiday season, chilling. I'm thinking, like, I'm up there trying to work out, thinking, like, maybe I'm dehydrated because, you know, the elevation or altitude sickness. So, like, my lower right side is just killing me. And I'm trying to work out through it, trying to run, trying to do whatever I can.
How long did you notice pain before you actually...
It was probably, like, a week.
Damn.
Being in Aspen. And then, like, you know, we just... I'm like, I'm not feeling well, but it's the holidays. So I'm chilling. I'm spending more time in the bed. And I remember trying to work out. And then just walk into the bedroom, and I just passed out and fell on the floor. And Mariah came in, she saw me, and she called, you know, 911, like,
damn.
Yo, passed out. And then at first they thought it was like, oh, he has altitude sickness.
Right.
You know, because that happens a lot up there. And then they were like, nah, well, he's dehydrated. And I'm like, nah, well, I think he got a kidney infection or maybe kidney stones. And then by the time they did a whole kidney biopsy, it was like, nah, he had, you know, kidney failure.
Damn.
And from that, they figured out, like, what made it happen. They saw that I had, or they diagnosed me with lupus nephritis. And, you know, at that time, shit, I was scared as shit. I was like, I don't know what the fuck that is, you know. And they rushed me to Cedars-Sinai, put me on a plane and all that shit. And I was in the hospital for, like, weeks trying to figure it out. And then, you know, I learned that you can live with lupus, you know, and you can actually be really strong and actually probably...
You look like you're kicking his ass.
Yeah, I was about to say, you can be... It's actually made me stronger, more health conscious and aware and kind of, you know, turn my test into a testimony in that way that now I can be an example for others who are dealing with, you know, autoimmune diseases or any other diagnoses that are out there. So it's kind of, I've become like a health and wellness advocate. And
that's what's up.
Doing stuff for, you know, the kidney foundations, the lupus foundations, and any other autoimmune diseases, any diseases that I just try to be like, look, you can fight through it. And that's even why we're working on a Dr. Sabi documentary. And one of the reasons I remember having a conversation with Nipsey about the same thing about, you know, putting the right things in your body and, you know, alkaline water and eating healthy.
Right.
And at the time, neither of us had had the chance to meet Dr. Sabi, but we were students of a lot of his practices, which is really, you know, make your food your medicine. And the fact that it's an African bio-mineral process that...
Eat to live, not live to eat.
Yeah, exactly. Like, and it's a way as, you know, melanated people, there's certain things that, you know, we are tolerant to and that we are intolerant to. And, and it's just about putting the right things in your body and utilizing them as fuel and nourishment and not, you know, just poison. So through that, you know, like I said, I had chopped it up with Nip a couple of times about that. And then I had heard that he was doing the Dr. Sabi documentary.
Right.
And then obviously, you know, the tragedy, you know, losing our king.
That
and
shit
I was like,
terrible.
Yeah, I was like, yo,
still terrible.
Yeah, I'm going to step up. And at least one thing I knew we had in common, I could take the reins and, you know, help the marathon continue in that space.
Right. I mean, I think we all have to pitch in and do our part. No one of us can do it all.
Facts.
And I think that's what we kind of realized a little bit when in the passing of cuz, that man, he was doing too much. Yeah. We was, you know what I'm saying? We was really looking, we weren't really looking to him because most of us didn't know
that
he was doing. But that responsibility needs to be shared by the entire community.
Fact.
You know what I mean? It shouldn't be one of us doing so much because it's so many of us doing so little.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
So, and he was certified at just based off of just like everything he spoke.
Right.
Had potency to it. You know what I mean? He wasn't about no bullshit from his music to how he moved to his community. Like, he will let you know. And it's in this industry, it's not a lot of cats that's like that. So I think that's why, you know, his legacy is so strong and so powerful because, you know, like he said, you know, check his record. You know what I mean? Like,
that, I mean, you know, that's never been questionable. And Nip was always a guy, man, that, you know, he would come as a youngster in the game, asking, you know, my opinion on certain things and even asking direction on how to do certain things. And he always just had an incredible amount of poise to him.
Yeah.
You dig what I'm saying? He always asked the question as though he already knew the answer.
right, facts.
And to see a young cat, man, come up, go through all of the different levels of the game.
Real deal.
You know, from the basement to the penthouse.
Yeah.
And do everything which you would have considered to be, have like, doing it right.
Right.
And still, you know, and still end up in a position that he ended up in. That shit was horrible for any of us to witness.
For real. But like I said, like, now he's immortalized in such a way.
That's the great part about it that, you know, I think this way more people become aware of the impact and what he stood for, what he represented.
Yeah.
You know, more people know about it now than they did then, and I think that's what he really wanted.
Yeah, and it's a tragedy that, you know, he's not physically here to witness it, but
it'll live on
forever, man. Yeah. Like you said, ain't no smut on my rep. Like, he was one of them dudes that you check his records, like, yo, dude was solid from how he moved with his family to how he moved with his community. So can't be mad at the legacy that he's created.
Sure. I mean, an inspiration to inspire, as he said, is one of the highest human acts.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So he's inspired people like me, people like you, who are going to continue
for
on
real.
Move in his honor.
Yes, sir.
And, man, I feel like I'd be remiss not to recognize the day, man, and remember the many lives we lost on 9/11.
Yeah.
It just happens to be 9/11. It won't be 9/11 when you hear this shit, but when we recorded.
That's when we sitting down right now.
Do you remember what you were doing on 9/11?
Yeah, I was in London.
What?
Yeah, I was in London working, shooting a TV show. And obviously, so we were a few hours already ahead, so I was already, the day was moving. I got off work, I was, you know, popping at some chick at the little, you know, Piccadilly Circus. Like, and then all of a sudden, my phone at the time started going crazy.
Damn.
And it was like, get back to the hotel. And then people from the state started calling. And just like, yo, there's planes hitting the buildings in New York. I'm like, what?
Damn.
And then because, you know, we were a certain group of Americans that were, you know, working and shooting over there. So they wanted to, like, quarantine us into the hotel.
Quarantine?
But, I mean, just because nobody knew what was going on. So they were like, we can't leave. We got to stick together. We're the only Americans over here. And, like, it got...
How do I know one of you motherfuckers ain't involved with this shit?
Exactly.
What
and
the
we,
fuck do you mean?
We
I
were
know you people.
Because, you know, they grounded all the planes for weeks, so I was stuck in London for a couple of weeks. And you know, I remember on the plane back, I was on a plane with Al Gore,
one of our people.
Yeah, and it was just, you know, just sent, like, he was in London too, and it was just like, it was a weird situation where, you know, you even saw it from their perspective and stuff. So I remember like it was yesterday though.
And at that time,
18 years ago,
Al Gore was the former vice president.
He had just got out of office.
So he
and
like,
he had just ran for president against Bush.
Shit, so
and remember, like,
see what the fuck you guys get.
he really won the election, and
then, you know, shit got, you know,
Florida.
Man, look, so I follow you on Instagram.
Yeah, yes, sir. I follow you too.
Man, I see you recently posted this image.
With the white lady?
Yeah, now, for those who can't see it, now, I'm going to describe it to you. It's a picture of six middle-aged white women all wearing a white shirt, a t-shirt. And that white t-shirt has in great big letters accompanied by an image of a stiletto high heel shoe patterned with the American flag, and the phrase on their shirt reads, and I quote, I'm a racist bitch.
2020.
With racist bitch in all caps. Now, I'm at a loss of words. I'm at a loss of words. But what in the Golden Girls is going on here, bro?
You know, I would be honest, because I believe, like, obviously somebody sent that picture to me, and, you know, we're men in the media now, so people send us stuff all the time. And I believe that photo is doctored. Because I believe the original shirt say, I'm a Trump girl. Which isn't really too far.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, well, kind of the same thing.
It wasn't that much of an exaggeration. Not that much of a reach. Right. You know?
So, but, I was like, yo, I got to give me one of these shirts, because now I believe that they have actually printed up those actual shirts, and because we feel like those are the police callers right there.
You dig what I'm saying?
Those are the ones that don't want us to have block parties, and, you know, they get nervous. And
they get mad as a motherfucker when it's just to see us having fun.
Yeah, so.
I never understood this shit in my life.
Nah, they get fearful, you know what I mean? He's staring at you.
How in the fuck can somebody else minding their own goddamn business bother you so
damn
much?
Be a threat to you.
I don't understand that. What the fuck are you doing so terrible?
Right, man. You know, they recognize that inner God that we got inside it.
That's real.
That's what it is.
Speaking of such, now, I don't know if it was the same piece of stand-up that you did that we talked about earlier, but I know in one of your performances, you said, this is a phrase that I, or this is a fact that I state so many times in my comments and in conversation. There is no such thing as black on black crime.
Facts.
That's
something that they
it's
made
a
up.
Systemic way to for them to continue police brutality and to create an excuse for them to militarize
and
the police.
And they were like, you talk about
promote mass incarceration.
Yeah, black on black crime. There's more white on white crime.
Absolutely.
Than there is
now, even more so than that. People commit crimes around the people they live around. You know,
they cohabitate.
Yeah, absolutely. So why is there no
Chinese on Chinese crime?
Chinese on Chinese crime. There's no white on white crime.
Good ass kung fu movie. There's tip. No, that's
you
what that
dig?
Is.
Hey, I'm saying.
But that's what I said.
Nobody ever stops to ask themselves that.
Yeah, that you got to think about those terms and the time when they were creating terms like black on black crime and when Hillary Clinton was calling us predators and you know, and community when they were giving, you know, 25 to life, three strikes laws. All of these things were designed to destroy our communities in that sense where when we even think we're
not to mention the war on drugs, crack epidemic,
all of that
contra scandal, all
of
that
was fake. Like there's agents that have come out that say, yo, the war on drugs was really just the war on black people.
That's real.
And it's documented. So when
this shit getting real now, because people getting ready to die. You know what I'm saying? Motherfuckers give on $10 when they die.
Yeah, they getting old,
you know,
and they're
getting
like
old, they're conscious fucking with them, they're caring about their eternal damnation.
Yep.
And now they want to come out and say, you know, that shit really didn't happen.
Yeah. And it's
okay, I told him, God, let me in.
Facts.
Nope.
Yeah. It's one of those terms, man, where, you know, as truth tellers like you and I are, we just got to call it for what it is, because we got a whole new generation that we got to inspire.
That's real.
And they can't believe that they are lesser than or feeble-minded or that they need to be policed.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? The police in itself was designed from, you know, everything from the slave codes to the overseers. Like,
yeah.
We got to shift this mentality on how we protect our communities.
I mean, I think it definitely takes the first step, and the first step is everybody doing something. You ain't got to do it all. You ain't got to do as much as Nick. Yeah. You ain't got to do as much as me. You know what I mean?
But do something.
You can even do as little as 5 mics. You know, he does absolutely nothing down here. So, you know what I'm saying? As long as everybody does something, I think, you know, we'll be off to a better place.
Absolutely.
Do you watch football?
I don't.
You don't watch it no more?
No more. I mean, I did for it, but ever since the cap shit, I ain't really seen a game.
You ain't seen a game
I mean, I still pay attention. I still watch SportsCenter and check it out, but I don't really.
Yeah. You know what? I don't watch it in my house.
Right.
I don't watch it in my
but
house.
But if it's at the sports bar.
Yeah, if I go somewhere and it's on, I'm watching.
See, I own a sports bar, so I let the game be on because that's what the Patriots
okay,
want.
You dig what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I think, you know, I don't see nothing wrong with that because the motherfucking game was going to be on anyway.
Anyway.
So whether I watch it or not.
And this has always really perplexed me because obviously there's the conversation, like the Jay-Z conversation and Cap, which I don't, there's no division there.
I don't think so.
But what about all of these employed $40 million superstars that are playing this game? They provide for their family, and we're not mad at them. So I think we should approach it the same way that, you know, if you enjoy the game of football, just appreciate the game of football. And, I stand with Cap. I was with him at Super Bowl Sunday at his crib.
Man, but on Super Bowl, I told Cap that he should come to Atlanta and we should do a big event, an anti-NFL event.
Yeah, he did. You know what I'm saying?
And you know, we should really gather, fill the room up with people like us, and show how much solidarity we have within the community.
Yeah, the fact that, and you know, Cap is my guy, but his goal is to play in the NFL. Like he wants to do what he was born to do, and that's to be a quarterback. So at the end of the day, I don't think anybody's saying let's get rid of football.
No,
I think the idea is like the solidarity in which you speak. Like, how can we all come together and show our unity? Now, the thing that would have been beautiful, which I wish would have happened and it would have all been over, as soon as they blackball Cap, if the majority of the players in the NFL would have said, we not coming to work until that man get a job, it would have been over in the weekend. It would have been like everybody like, oh shit. Then that owner mentality would have been switched up hella quick. Because if ain't nobody showed up to work because we had that solidarity, that would have showed our power. But instead, they start turning us against each other. That's even what's happening with the Jay shit.
That's what they're trying to do.
All we gotta do is just keep the same solidarity that we got to keep rocking, because, you know, that man sacrificed some things for his freedom of speech and for our community, and I think he's owed the solidarity and respect for us to support him.
I mean, I can dig it. I tell Cap all the time, I think he's stronger without working within the constraints of the NFL.
I agree. I think the legacy would be better. But at the same time,
who am I to not support whatever your dream is?
Yeah, but this is what I say. If I'm writing this movie,
okay,
you know what I mean, that final scene
is going to be him in the NFL.
It's Cap walking back onto that field.
Okay,
the national anthem comes on,
and he kneels.
He takes a knee, and everybody kneels with him. You know what I mean? Like that, because at the end of the day,
I hope he lives that long.
I mean, but
because he's in great shape right now. I wonder how long you have to keep that shit up for this to happen.
But I'm just saying, like, if we were to write the movie,
motherfucker have to be like Shannon Sharp or something.
But I'm just saying that's what we would want to see.
Yeah, of course
we
would.
I understand, because his dream would be recognized, and then the statement of our solidarity would be stated. So, and that's what, like, to me, because I asked you this, and I haven't got a chance to talk to Jay. But when, you know, if I do get that opportunity, I want to know what he got out of sitting next to Goodell and making that statement. Because I see why they benefited from it. I don't know what he got out, or we got. He don't need the money. He's definitely a leader. He ain't no sellout. None of that stuff. That's not even up for question. But I'm like, yo, what conversation? Why would you choose now? Because even that
would it be a matter of inclusion, though, to make sure that we're fairly represented within the corporation?
I don't want to see that at the table. Fuck the table. We make our own. He has the power to make his own table.
I mean,
I just don't understand. Even if you're gonna have the conversations, don't sit up and laugh and like to me, that's where I was like, ooh, they using you as a pawn. Like, I don't see the benefit that you, because Jay's one of them dudes, like, I'm not showing up unless I get something out of it, whether it's like a bag or a elevated.
See, that's the thing, though,
for our community.
We'll never know.
That's what I'm saying. Like, I was like, he.
We'll never know.
Any strategic.
Yeah.
Like, I'm always, like, if Jay say we're going to watch this play out.
We got to see it through.
But that's what, like, because to me, I was thinking, like, okay, Jay about to own a team, or Jay about to, he got Cap a job. Like, to me, like, again, another great scene in the movie would be
whispers and rumblings.
Yeah, like, a great scene in the movie would be Jay-Z like, yes, I'm doing this with the NFL, and Cap will be starting on Monday. Like, then we praising Jay-Z.
It's not too soon. I mean, you know, that's one. Excuse me. It's not too late.
Late. Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. That's it. I just don't know. Out of that, the way it played out, it looked like they were using him, and I don't know what he got out of it. Or what. I don't want to say we because it ain't no collective we.
But you know, the spook that sat by the door. You know, the spook that sat by the door.
Absolutely.
He had to, you know what I mean?
But
it had to appear a certain way for it to have the effect.
That's what I'm saying. There's got to be a method to what he, like, he's being strategic. He's being calculated. So I'm like, but for me, from where I'm sitting, I'm like, I don't see where he don't need the money. Yeah. He don't need the attention. Yeah. He said in one of his rhymes, he said,
he has $1 billion and a Beyonce. I mean,
right.
You know what I'm saying?
Like, he don't need the NFL for nothing. He stated that. So why would he even take their call?
Yeah. I mean, I do know in the Atlanta Super Bowl.
Right.
The one last year.
With JD and all that stuff that he was doing.
Nah, what I'm saying is, I do know that there was a definite lack of representation from the, like, you know, it was a disconnect.
Right.
You know, of course, JD.
It's always
of course,
been,
of course, JD. I think that's probably what I'm imagining that the NFL could be looking for them to kind of bridge the gap to.
Yeah, but let's fuck the NFL. Like at the end of the day, like, that's they shit.
Yeah, I totally agree. But do we want inclusion or not? Do we want to be represented or not? Because I know we'll be pissed off if they get up there and have some fucking lily white pop artists doing our latest dances.
They've been doing that.
I know it, but and we say something about it. So could this not be a step in the right direction for
so we gonna put you in control of the niggas dancing around?
Not the niggas dancing around.
But I was saying, like,
you say the shit like that. Like, not just that. I'm just saying, okay, look, man, obviously there are a lot of people who come watch football that are of your culture.
Facts.
And that means we have them to represent as we're entertaining, as we present our games and do our thing. Okay, so instead of us figuring out the best way to represent them, why don't I hire you or partner with you?
This is the thing, because when you go back to representation and being a part of the conversation, I'll take it all the way back to Jim Brown. Now, if we want to talk about somebody who came and was a true fixture in the NFL,
right?
Like, he was running white folks over, you know. And,
him and OJ,
and well, even because
OJ,
you know,
kept running.
Yeah, OJ was like, "I'm not black, I'm OJ." That nigga just kept going. And he's like killing white women. It's crazy. Allegedly.
Wait.
Allegedly.
Hey,
allegedly.
Not guilty.
Allegedly.
If the glove don't fit, you must have quit.
Hey, he's still out there talking shit, so I got to salute him. He don't give a fuck. He's on Twitter.
He's free to do that.
As he should be. Now, but in all seriousness, Jim Brown stepped up and at a time when you want to talk about inclusion and having a seat at the table, and even in solidarity of, it was Jim Brown, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Muhammad Ali, when it was time to stand up for the black athlete,
that's right.
They all came together.
That's right.
And I feel like the NBA does that very well.
Yeah.
You know, LeBron and all, they'll step up.
LeBron, Chris Paul.
But there's something about this $40 million slave mentality that the NFL has with calling the owners, and there are no black owners, and you know what I mean? Like, these constructs are hanging over our head, are truly racist. So if nobody's dealing with that, I don't give a fuck about who's dancing at the halftime. Let's get to the real issues. Let's get some black owners.
I get that.
You creating these millionaires, yeah, that's great, but are you allowing them to excel? Because really, at the end of the day, it's a game of gladiators. You watching them bang each other in the head, and you training them up from babies for your entertainment.
Right.
You know what I mean? And like, when you really step back and look like what we have to offer, if you're not going to, like I said, fuck having a seat at the table, we need to create our own table. And that's why I commend people like, you know, my guy Ice Cube. Who,
yeah, the big three.
We got to support that.
The big three is a motherfucker. That's a fucking, I don't know how he did it.
Yeah, but we gotta rock with him.
Because
even I was having a conversation with Cap. I was like, you know, it was at that time, because I feel like they was talking about Puff was, you know, trying to buy the Panthers.
Yeah,
I was like, Puff got a lot of money, but he ain't got that.
Hey, they pushed his head right on the front.
Yeah, you gotta have at least $3 billion liquid.
How about we give you a Ciroc lounge?
Like, so, but I was like, yo, what about arena football? What about Canadian football? Like, we can go buy that. We can go buy all the arena football teams to get collected. We put our money together and have everybody. Or what about HBCU college football? Let's have everybody go to HBCU.
That we could do.
And then we could support that. It's already an infrastructure there. Let's go support our historically black college university football teams.
Right.
And show up and wear their stuff, buy their merchandise.
Right.
Then we change things.
Now, although I love where this conversation is going, I asked you, did you watch the NFL when you watching football? Because there's some shit going on with Odell.
Over Odell. Oh, yeah. I thought you were talking about the Antonio Brown shit. I'm aware of it all.
I mean, but guess what, though? Like, with Antonio Brown, I don't buy that shit. Like, the timing of that shit is like weird.
First of all, I know AB and he a wild boy. Like, he do whatever the fuck he wants to do. So I salute him, Marshawn, all of them cats that just be like, look, I'm gonna move how I want to move. And the shit that happened from the Raiders, I wanted to see him on the Raiders. Like, right. You know, when I was watching football, I was like, I fuck with the Raiders just because of their energy.
But shit, I love him in Oakland. I don't know how I'm gonna like him in Vegas.
Yeah.
I really don't know.
Yeah, it's a different team.
I don't know.
It's
Vegas
definitely
football?
And then I thought it was a boss ass move for him to go from the Raiders and then damn near hours later to be on the Patriots, because the Patriots they can still do what they do, they get there.
And even if you have to throw around a cracker put it in the air
I respect that move with AB, but and then like you said, then now all of this shit come out, I was like, come on, man.
Yeah, I just don't understand how that shit couldn't have came out earlier in the season.
Well, that happened, 2017, right?
It just seems strategic. It seems
definitely.
Like
somebody made a call to her. Somebody made a call and said, now's the time. Yeah, I know you've been wanting you've been wanting this $1.6 million.
Mm.
You want that new gym.
Mm.
Strike now.
What you mean, $1.6 million new gym?
Because, you know, she was a trainer, and there was a whole thing where she was asking him for she was asking for $1.6 million.
For her to not tell people?
I think he was going to make an investment. And he was like, nah, I'm good. You trying to... And then that's when she was like, well, you know.
Whoa. These are new findings. These are new developments.
And that's it. Like, I haven't done all the research, but I know that she was asking for $1.6 million.
She was asking for $1.6 million before the allegations?
I think that was a whole... Yeah, the whole idea
before
was like...
Before she made
the allegations. I will go to the public...
If you don't invest $1.6 million. Oh, but that just, you know what I'm saying? That just kind of, it pokes holes
and
in all of
it. And that's what AB came out. He was like, look, I ain't trying to invest it. And then, you know, he started talking about, look, I did this, and I didn't do this, and you ain't going to finesse me, and, you know.
Mm.
It's all in the text.
Goodness.
Yeah. So, again.
I wasn't even talking about AB right then.
Yeah, we were talking about Odell.
I was talking about Odell, man.
Yeah.
Odell
something a little lighter.
Odell wore a $350,000 Richard Mille watch.
Yeah, that sounds like an endorsement to me.
Yeah. So, what is the argument the Browns are making here by saying that he's wrong for doing it, and why should we even care?
I think there's only, especially when it comes to the NFL, there's only a few superstars, because the majority of of our brothers got on helmets, and it goes back to this idea of it's a pack of them. And we control them. And we don't want them to get out of place. So when a couple of these cats who can take off their helmets and move how they want to move, like the Odells, like the ABs, like the Marshawns, and like, you know, they always, you know, they give praise to the quarterbacks because, you know, So, you know, shouts out to all the quarterbacks that are doing it. But I salute cats like the Odells and the cats who say, look, there's a man under this helmet, and I would do what I want to do. Right. And he's always done that. So I'm like, yo, I support you, nigga, wherever the fuck you want to wear. Deion was out there wearing diamonds and ropes.
Deion started that shit. Yeah.
Yeah, so why
Deion,
not?
Deion, Lawrence Taylor.
Yeah, they was...
You know what I'm saying?
Andre Rison.
Yeah.
And then, because when you think about the watch, and you know,
Irvin,
it wasn't one of those watches.
Oh, sure, it was. It was their version of it.
It was a sports.
But
watch.
It
didn't have no diamonds. It wasn't heavy.
It didn't have diamonds.
No, the reason why that watch is so expensive because it's super light. Like I got one.
I'm not buying one.
Yeah, it's not $350,000, but it's so light. Like it's like you can't even feel it.
Yeah, so I mean, but if that's his watch.
Yeah.
He bought it with his money.
You think so?
If he choose, I mean,
I think they gave it to
him. As far as the Cleveland Browns are concerned.
They didn't give it to him.
So why are they worried about whether or not he wore that watch during the motherfucking game?
The winner in all of this is the watch company.
The winner of all this is the watch company. All of this fucking free press is if they needed it.
And you know how many people are going to go get that watch now that can afford that?
Not many.
But if they sell two, they've made a profit off of this whole situation.
This is true, because, I mean, look, man, I've been looking at the watches for a while, and I'm just not going to buy it. I just can't. I look at all of the pieces of property, all of the other things that I can do. And I just can't do it, man. You know?
Especially because we wear these watches. Because,
200 is my limit.
Yeah, we wear these watches to because it's for the attention. When you look at it, it's like, all right.
We wear it for motherfuckers to know we getting money.
Yeah.
That's really what it is. So when we go in meetings and, you know, you won't lowball me because you know I already got money.
That's
really what we, you know, it's an investment.
That's what we do.
It's an investment. Now, in other news, Bobby Brown was recently. Now, this is legendary Bobby Brown.
Legendary
Bobby Brown was recently
removed.
I always
say, like, the niggas with the last name Brown, boy, that's the...
Hey, they gonna catch hell forever.
Antonio, Bobby,
everybody.
Jim, Chris, James.
You know what I'm saying? All of them.
Like, your last name is Brown, you went to
trouble.
Shit.
Y'all is in trouble, Jack. Y'all is in trouble. So Bobby Brown was recently removed from a JetBlue flight.
Right.
He apparently asked for a drink and shared that he was a nervous flyer. At least he was honest.
Right.
It looks like three of the flight attendants complained, and somewhere shortly after, authorities removed him from the flight.
Oh, come on, man. Don't be cruel.
And deboarded the plane to sort it out.
It's his prerogative.
Needless to say, he missed his flight.
It's fucked up. Didn't he just get hit by a car last week?
God damn.
Like, this is not a good time.
Now, listen, man.
Shouts out to Bobby, man, the legendary
Bobby Brown, king of R&B, man. Do you think the airlines give the flight staff and the crews too much power?
Way too much.
I mean...
First of all, they have air marshals. I don't know if you ever noticed, but if you ever
it's
see
always
like
a
real strong, like 5'6" bulky white man sitting there reading the newspaper.
They do be a little short in stature.
Yeah, they don't want them too big.
Because
if they're too big,
they got to duck down.
Yeah, and then you notice that they try to make them incognito. So they be like a little stocky, real serious.
Yeah.
And he'd be like in the seat, the window. The aisle seat in first class, the last one in the back.
Right.
That's where the air marshals sit.
Okay.
Those should be the only people who have authority. They be strapped, too. They have a gun on each side of their hip.
They have a gun?
Yeah.
With rubber bullets or real bullets?
No, real bullets.
Man, the air marshals, a good shot.
Yeah, they be on some Nino Brown shit. What was that movie Wesley was in where he was
Passenger 57? Yeah.
It be them dudes. And
so
I know
that's another
Wesley
Snipes movie. Listen, we had fucking DC.
Nino Brown, that's another nigga with the last name Brown that got fucked up by the system.
Well, he actually fucked the system.
This is bigger than Nino Brown.
Hey, man, me and DC was in here, man. We was kicking shit, and he was trying to figure out. He couldn't remember a Wesley Snipes movie. This one happened to be the Brooklyn movie.
Oh, the one Sugar Hill?
Now, see, that's what I said.
Oh, he went the other one with him and Don Cheadle.
Pretty much
Sugar Hill Part 2.
Yeah. Well, it was Brooklyn's Finest.
Yeah. I remember. I auditioned for that. You auditioned for that shit?
No, I didn't.
I remember that.
I did audition for Drumline.
Yeah, I know, and I got it. And you didn't.
Yeah,
but we ain't going to talk about that. We ain't going to bring that shit up. Because you did ATL, which I was supposed to do after Drumline, but, you know. It was called Jelly Beans when I was going to do it.
See, that's what I said. It couldn't happen.
And you said,
I said, no,
I'm not
going to
be in no goddamn movie called Jelly Beans.
In the motherfucking world, we going to do a movie called Jelly Beans.
Well played, Tim. Well fucking played.
Man, you know what? I think it's about time. And people don't know another thing about you that people don't know. You're actually in college.
Yeah. Howard University.
So you made a conscious decision as a multi-hyphenate multimillionaire to dedicate your time, effort, attention, and energy to go back to college.
Man.
And you go into an HBCU.
Yeah, Howard University. And this is, I feel like, honestly, it's the best thing that's ever happened to me in life. Next to Mary and Mariah Carey. No, but when I say that, because it's elevated not only my intelligence, but my awareness of
black people, right. of myself.
Right.
But it's allowed me everything that I ever wanted to do. Like, man, I'm getting a master's in psychology.
Dope.
A PhD in theology.
You getting all that shit at one time?
They set it up to where I can. First, I'm getting my bachelor's this May in criminology. Yeah. And then from there, I'm getting the master's in psychology and then the doctor in divinity.
How long this shit gonna take, bro?
I think I'll be done with everything, hopefully 2023,
but
I walked the stage in May.
What?
I graduated the first part with my degree in sociology, administrative justice, or criminology, however you want to call it. I get that in May.
Whoa, so you get a bachelor's in May?
Yeah.
And when did you start?
2016. It's been 4 years. It'll be 4 years.
You started in 2016?
Yeah.
God damn. Yep. On the low, you just been motherfucking...
Going to school every
creating,
week.
You've been creating television shows, hosting television shows.
And flying to D.C. every week.
And going to D.C. still staying in line with your school shit.
Yep.
Man, that is fucking commendable.
Thank you, man.
What's your schedule?
I just got back. Tuesdays and Thursdays are my classes.
Okay.
So usually, you know, obviously I got my radio show, so I do all of that. Then I fly, go to school, fly back that same night after class.
What?
Yeah.
You do your homework on the plane?
Exactly. That's exactly what I do.
You have a tutor?
Nah.
Oh, you got one of the Wild and Out girls doing your homework.
Yo, real talk. There's a couple of super educated Wild and Out girls that got some degrees that I'm like, yo. Help me with this paper, listen, girl.
I already know. So, okay, sure.
I'm telling you, there's a couple of them that's
interns.
Pretty goddamn smart.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. How in the fuck
But
you,
I do all my own homework.
I get that. But they are essentially like your elves.
Here you go.
You know what I'm saying?
Look, see, this is the, there's been...
At least they proofread.
There's this myth, there's this rumor that I indulge in the Wild and Out girls. That's not true, Tip. Now, what has happened in the past, if there's... I was just waiting.
Do you really believe, Nick? Everybody, call expeditiously. 1-800-EXPEDITIONALLY.
Now, if I have a
if
friend...
If you believe Nick Cannon right now...
If I have a friend that's a young lady who needs a job, and she happens to be a very attractive young lady that fits
the... I bet
the
you give her a job, all right.
And some people come to me like, hey, I would love to be a Wild and Out girl, and I already have a relationship with her. So, oh, that's easy. Easy call. You got that. But I'll keep it all professional, especially now that I'm, you know, Wild and Out girls are little, they're a little younger than what I like. I like a more mature woman, as we see of what I've married and what I've taken.
Absolutely.
Now, because I remember there was a time...
I think you just like women, Nick.
I do.
I think you just like women.
But when I first started Wilding Out, the Wilding Out girls were older than me. So I was at all of them.
Okay.
But now they're like young girls. So I don't really do the
young
girls.
But we all know
thing.
That you don't want to get married, so you only need to deal with them for a little while at a time, Nick. So,
but there's something about a seasoned woman that know what she wants.
Yeah, that's
that
the one.
She don't be with that bullshit. She ain't got no Instagram.
Them the ones you want to keep around.
Them is the ones I be at.
But
so the Wild and Out girls' mamas. Now, I done took a couple of them there.
Ooh. All right, then.
You heard it here first on Expeditions.
But guess what, though, man? Regardless of what you have done or have not done, man, we appreciate all your efforts, man.
Man, likewise, King.
Man, thank you, bro. Thank you from my mouth to your ears, man, from the culture.
That's
you
love.
Did, you know what I'm saying, man?
Nah, that's love.
And shit. And you also a director.
Yeah, man. We got to get on these movies, man. We've been talking about it way too long, man.
I can't wait.
You as an actor, I feel like you just began to scrape the
greatness. I think we could do a new Bad Boys.
Yeah.
I think we might be better than Will and Martin.
Absolutely.
Lawrence.
I don't know about this new Bad Boy trailer. I mean, I love them both, man. So I think we should do some other shit like that.
Yeah, or even... like, you know, on some Lethal Weapon shit.
I think that'd be ill.
You dig what I'm saying? Another 48 hours.
Yeah.
Or some shit.
I'll be the straight lace cat. Yeah. You'll be the street cat.
You know what I'm saying? That shit'll be dope. That
come on, Cher, make that shit happen.
You know what I mean?
Tomorrow.
See, one time for Nick Cannon, man. Y'all go check out everything he has going on.
Yeah.
Tell him about the movie that you directed with Chris Brown.
Yeah,
and Bird,
Chris Brown, Birdman, DC Young Fly, Cedric the Entertainer, Evan Ross.
Okay.
Yeah, it's solid, man. It's called She Ball. It takes place in Inglewood. It's about the gentrification of Inglewood, but it's also about female street basketball.
Awesome.
So I kind of took all of the things that we love and kind of mix it up in a pot together. It's funny. It's poignant. It has a message. It kind of takes, you know, I'm a student of Spike Lee, so I was trying to get my do the right thing.
And you wrote it?
Yeah, I wrote it, directed, and I'm in it as well.
And congratulations for being in Chirac.
Thank you, man. People didn't understand that shit, man.
I didn't either. It was the worst shit I ever saw. I'm not gonna
take that up with Spike. I love this, Spike.
You rhymed through the whole motherfucker, dog.
It was like Lysistrata. Lysistrata. It was a theatrical approach.
Let's talk about something you did well. Let's talk about something you did well.
I was good at Chirac.
Let's talk about something you did well. Hey, listen. How about The Masked Singer? That's your shit.
Yeah, man.
That's
number one show on television, season 2, debuting right now. Man, it's a
I bet NBC wish they had that motherfucker.
Exactly. I was just about to say that. Like, that's the ending to that story,
you
to did where
what I'm saying.
I stood on my principles.
Yeah.
And, you know, love to everybody over there at Fox who, you know, gave me the opportunity to not only host it, but also produce the show as well.
That's amazing.
So, you know, I wasn't an executive producer of America's Got Talent. I was getting a great check.
Right.
But I'm the host and the executive producer of The Masked Singer. So
that's
when you stand on your principles and you stand for something, you know, I think the universe always pays it back the right way. And
that's
right. What The Masked Singer is.
So anybody who want to go, who work at Popeye's, who's sick of that shit.
Tell Popeye's, hey, fuck you, get some
fuck that shit. I'm
we
sick
going
and tired.
Across the street to Chick-fil-A.
Exactly. You know what I'm saying? You could have a Chick-fil-A in your future. So.
And own that shit.
Yeah.
It's actually a lot easier to franchise a Chick-fil-A than it is a Popeye's. That's
well, you know, I actually know three people personally who own Popeye's.
Really?
Actually, four.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
One of them is our age.
Really?
Yeah.
That's crazy. See, because I want to buy a Waffle House and a Chick-fil-A.
I hate those motherfuckers.
But that's why I want to buy them.
Yeah.
Because I feel like we can get in there and make them. We're
the
patrons.
Let's create a new one. Let's make a Waffle Hut.
A Waffle Hut.
You know what I'm saying?
Pull up. Stay open 24 hours.
Yeah,
put them
man.
All across the street from all the Waffle
yeah,
Houses.
Yeah, we trapping waffles.
There it is.
You know what I'm saying? We got waffles on all kinds of hot plates, man.
This sounds like part of the storyline for the movie, Cher. I'm with it.
Okay, here expeditiously, we have what we call the word of the week. Now, the word of the week is a word that I choose out of my elaborate vocabulary. And usually, man, it is in some way associated to the guest or the conversation that I've had with the guests. And, you know, speaking about family and kids and our principles and whatnot, the word that I came up with, man, is sacrosanct. Yes, sacrosanct. And the meaning is something that is regarded as too important or too valuable to be interfered with. I'll use it in a sentence for you. The gentleman felt after coming home from prison that his time with his children would be sacrosanct. All right, now y'all can go ahead and use it however you want to, man. You could just throw that word around in conversation, pretend like you've known it for years. You dig what I'm saying? You don't even have to tell nobody that you got it from here. All right? That's what we do here expeditiously, man. We want to teach what's been taught. As according to Young Thug. Right on, man. One time for Nick Cannon. Thank you for dropping by expeditiously,
come on,
brother.
Man.
I really appreciate you.
I love
you.
What you're doing. This is amazing.
Yeah, love and respect, bro. Thanks for listening to Expeditiously with me, T.I.P. And I want everyone in your family, everyone at your job, every person you run into to subscribe to Expeditiously with me. It's exclusively on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One. And when you invite them to subscribe, please don't forget to leave out the most important fact of the matter. If you listen to this show and subscribe to it, quite frankly, you'll look better. So, with that, I bid you adieu.
Expeditiously is produced, engineered, and edited by KC Morris.